Hello, everyone, and welcome to another off-grid podcast, Tanda Ranch. My name is Thomas, and I'm just one part of Tanda Ranch, and I'll be with you today. And today, I'm going to talk a little bit about who I am, kind of my background, then also kind of the cost of what it's like the daily, or not really the daily, but the weekly cost of doing what we do out here. It's not cheap. There are a lot of people out here who live where we do, in this off-grid community, who came out here better prepared, some not as well prepared, some a little bit more financially better off than we are, some have shown up out here on a dime and just try to make it work, and sometimes it does. But that's what we're going to talk about today. As far as myself, a little bit of background here. I was born in Ohio in 1975, so to give you kind of an idea, I'm 46 years old. Born in Ohio in 1975, I lived there till I was 10 years old, and then moved to Texas. Oddly enough, it's kind of weird, my mother, she came down here for a vacation with some friends with the South Padre Island, which is beautiful. Went down there, had a good time, came back up to Ohio, was like, we're going to Texas. Went to Midland, which is a giant dust bowl. And Midland, not the knock it or anything like that. It was right at the end of the oil boom out there. And I'm not sure if she thought we were going to be out there during the oil boom or what. But shortly after moving to Texas, to Midland, I got my first experience actually of Arizona. Because when we moved to Texas, it was kind of a pack up and go, spur of the moment thing, and I ended up, actually, me and my older sister, we ended up going to hang out with my dad, who lives in Arizona, and so that was my first experience of Arizona. He lived down in the Tucson area, and it's extremely, you know, it was my first experience with Arizona. It was a good experience. We went camping. I believe I was out there for about a month. It was the first time I ever really had to deal with a dry heat, and I had a rash on my neck more than anything. It was just something I wasn't used to. It was so dry out here, and this is where it kind of goes back to the environment of things. In Arizona, it is so dry that you'll get, this sounds kind of gross, but you'll get the boogers in your nose, and the just the dryness, your skin gets really dry. You have to be able to take care of yourself, otherwise you'll get really dry out here. It'll dry up quite a bit. You have to drink a ton of water to keep yourself good and hydrated. But so a month goes by, my mom comes out here, picks me up, and we end up in Central Texas when I go back. I lived in the Austin, Texas area. I lived there for about 30, 35 years. I love that area of Texas. It's a very, it was more the hill country than anything. I was about 30 miles outside of Austin at the time. Now Austin has grown so much that it made its way back out to where we were in the Cedar Park area, Lake Travis area. It's a beautiful place out there. And after, I would say about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I had gotten my CDL, commercial driver's license. Got my CDL and decided that I wanted to do something different. I had worked there at the large computer company there in Round Rock, Texas, Dell Computers. I worked there. It was a good company. I enjoyed working there. I was kind of a casualty of a layoff system. Or layoffs that they were doing at the time back in 2007. Actually worked out for the better. I ended up with another job shortly thereafter that paid me quite a bit more. So I came out of it smelling pretty good, like a rose. And then I've also worked at Apple. I've worked at other companies, corporate world. And I just, sitting at a cube was not for me. I did it. I enjoyed my job at Apple. I love talking to people. That's why I'm doing a podcast. I enjoy talking. Also, when I worked at Dell, though, I did a logistics. I worked in a warehouse, did a lot of logistics work. and customs paperwork, stuff like that, which kind of, in a roundabout way, led me to driving a truck, so to speak. I had to deal with a lot of truck drivers, and they were going back and forth to Canada and Mexico and to different places in the U.S. and for the domestic shipping and whatnot. But then after all that was said and done and I started driving a truck, I've been sticking with driving a truck since then. I've had the luxury of doing that, seeing the country. I've been to 46 of the lower 48 states, not including Vermont and North Dakota. Those were the only two places and that I haven't been. In many ways, it is very much living semi-off-grid, semi being the pun there. But you kind of live off-grid because yourself, you have to be able to take care of yourself. You don't have like the amenities of a living in a house, central air, stuff like that. You do have a lot of these trucks nowadays have got, it's like a small apartment going down the road, but you're still having to go out, get your food, like at the grocery stores and stuff like that. In some ways, it's kind of living off grid. In other ways, it's not. You're basically, you provide your own power, you provide your own water, stuff like that. Kind of like what we do out here. So it's kind of, and you live in a small area, which is what we do. We live in our building, which is only about 380 square feet, which is pretty small, but we, you know, a lot of what we do is outdoors as well. We shower outdoors. Our restroom is not in our building. So we make with what we got. Now, so that kind of goes into my next segment here of it's expensive to do all this stuff. A lot of people seem to think that living off-grid is cheap, and it can be. It just depends on the luxuries and how you want to go about doing it. I've seen some people come out here and live in an RV that they paid, you know, $1,000 for and throw a couple solar panels on it and do odd jobs, and that's all they do. You know, they still go into town, get their food. They go into town and get water delivered, or they get water delivered, or they have cases of water sitting around. And they're kind of in survival mode at that point there. And then I've also seen some people come out here with an $80,000 RV, you know, and an $80,000 truck that they just bought. You know, they came out here with money, and they live off-grid, and they, you know, it's far from a rough lifestyle for them. For some people, it's extremely rough. You know, that person who comes out here in a $1,000 RV who, you know, is constantly having to work odd jobs just to get by, and do small things like that, it's tough. And then it also has to do with the elements and stuff out here. If you're just barely getting by and you're in a $1,000 RV, and you don't have everything tied down, especially where we are in Arizona, you have, you know, zero temperatures, 100 degree temperatures, dead heat where it just sits there and bakes you, then you've also got situations where it is windy like crazy here. And that's something a lot of people, you know, if you come out here to visit, you know, pay attention to when you're out here, what it's like, because if you show up out here in September, it's beautiful. It's nice out here. The skies are always clear. During springtime, we get winds like weekly that stay around all week long, and they stay between 30 to 40 to 50 mile an hour winds, and it's just about impossible to get anything done. That's where some of these costs come in, because then you have to build, you know, windbreaks for your garden. You have to, you know, repair things. You have to be able to adapt, be able to afford to do it. You know, the more things you have, the more stuff that can go wrong. We have situations where we run out of, let's see, what's a good way to put it? So in the wintertime, we have our water system. You know, it's pretty basic. We have water totes, water hoses going to an on-demand water pump that goes into our kitchen. We had a fixture break because, well, it froze. In Texas, we never had to worry about that. And that's things we knew could happen, but we didn't plan on it happening. As a truck driver, I make a pretty good living. I'm not going to go into the details, but it's, you know, an above average living out here. And Friday comes around, it's payday, and usually by Sunday, I'm trying to figure out where all my money went. And it's because we do a lot of things like for improvements and stuff like that. We're trying to build something out here. We're not trying to, or we couldn't just show up and have it all available to us. You know, some people out here, they have the money to build a house. They have, you know, their 40 acres of land. They got it all fenced in. You know, we have had situations where we build our area for our animals, like our goats, ducks, chickens, and all that good stuff. And because we didn't fence it, and I'm using air quotes here, properly, if you leave your feed anywhere out, anything like that, the cows out here, because we're on an open range ranch, the cows out here will come along and just, you know, cows are kind of stupid. They'll see food and not stop at your fence. They just go right through your fence. And so these are things you have to worry about. You will be out there at the worst times of the night trying to chase cows off, and then I have to park a vehicle in front of a hole in the fence until we can get around to fixing it, because, well, I work Monday through Friday, 12 to 14 hour days. Sometimes I'm out overnight, and I'm not able to address it right then and there. Another hard situation is, I'll tell you a little story here. We had one night, we had our goat pen, and we felt pretty confident that it was good for keeping our goats from getting out. And it was. It works really good. We've never, ever had a goat escape. But we, at one point, decided to stick the hay near the fence, our bales of alfalfa. Not a good idea. You learn from your mistakes, and we have. But we had literally the cows come by, hang their head over the fence, and start eating the alfalfa. And when they started eating the alfalfa, the cows, they just kind of knocked down the fence and came into the goat pen. Well, this is all happening at like 3:00 in the morning. It's about 14 degrees outside. It was cold. And I hear this noise outside of our house, so I go out there to see what it is. I'm literally in my boxer shorts and some sandals. I have to try to wrangle out. You know, we have 3 cattle that are now inside of our goat pen, and I have to figure out a way to get them out of it. So if you can imagine, 3:00 in the morning, 14 degrees, no shirt, no shorts, just my boxer shorts and some sandals. I have a T-post in my hand, which is used for fencing. And I'm trying to get these cattle the hell out of my damn goat pen. And so these are the kind of adventures and stuff you have in a situation like this. I can tell the story to my kids, and I can look back at it now and laugh. But it is what it is. You learn how to deal with things. You learn how to adjust. But it was very frustrating at the time. I can laugh at it now. Like the situation we had with our turkeys that I'd mentioned in the previous episode. You learn how to deal with things a little bit better. This week we're actually getting rid of one of our goats, and we're getting another one. We're getting rid of one of our goats that is kind of a mixed breed. He's a Nubian, Nigerian, La Mancha mix, and we're getting just a little La Mancha buckling. And he's a registered La Mancha buckling to go with our registered La Mancha doe. And so we're looking forward to that, because we're trying to really focus on sticking to one breed of goats, or two, La Mancha and Nubian. They both make excellent milk, and if they mix and make milk, their milk will be phenomenal. But anyway, these are just a couple of things that I wanted to talk to y'all about today and touch base on. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to drop them off to me. guess, you know, if you like the podcast or are enjoying it, please do leave a review. If you have a chance to, it's not a big deal. I'm not in this to make money. So y'all enjoy the rest of your day and take it easy.